Monopoly is fake money, and the heartbreak of landing on Boardwalk when somebody else has built a big red hotel there. Only in Monopoly are you likely to rejoice at being sent to jail, knowing it may delay financial ruin. A new movie titled Under the Boardwalk explores the delights of the board game that has thrilled and dismayed millions of people in over 40 different countries for all sorts of reasons.
Playing Monopoly is the only time where you can bankrupt your friends and they will still be your friends.
Certainly that's one of those reasons, courtesy of John Mayer, a dedicated player featured in Under the Boardwalk. Joining me now to discuss the movie in which that line is featured is Kevin Tostado, the producer and director of Under the Boardwalk. Kevin, welcome to Only a Game.
Thank you for having me on, Bill.
In Monopoly, players roll dice to determine which properties they will land on, and then they can buy and eventually build on those properties and charge their opponents when they land on them, all of which sounds simple enough. Were you surprised at how wrapped up, perhaps even obsessed, some competitors have become with this game?
Not at all. I mean, Monopoly is a game that has been around for more than 75 years now, and certainly people want to be the best at things, and what better than to be able to become a millionaire through the game of Monopoly?
Among the world-class Monopoly players featured in Under the Boardwalk, there seems to be some difference of opinion about how much of the game is luck and how much is skill. Where do you come down in that debate?
Well, certainly you can't control the outcome of the dice unless you're using a set of weighted dice, but luck is always going to be there, and occasionally you will have the games where the properties that you land on aren't really the ones that you're looking for, but the way that people really stand out when they play the game of Monopoly is through their interpersonal skills, and that's learning how to negotiate with your opponents to get trades to be in your favor, and knowing what the probabilities are that you're going to land on a certain color group or that your opponents might land on them, and that's where you should focus your investment.
Knowing your opponent, interpersonal skills, this means like knowing a guy likes light blue better than dark blue, even if dark blue is a lot better property, something
mm-hmm.
like that.
Yeah, if somebody's from Chicago, they might have an affinity for Illinois Ave that you can try and exploit and kind of finding out kind of what was their favorite token or just different elements about kind of people's personalities that you can try and incorporate into your gameplay.
Now, Monopoly seems like the ultimate game for capitalists. The idea is to get all the money and leave everybody else with none. Yet the game that became Monopoly was invented back in 1903 by a woman who was an anti-capitalist. She had an absolutely anti-capitalist agenda. Tell us about Elizabeth Magee.
Well, Elizabeth Magee was a follower of Henry George, who was an economist who promoted the single tax theory and that kind of all property should be taxed the same. And so her early game, which was called the Landlord's Game, was very much educational and was designed to help kind of spread this theory. And she actually pitched it to Parker Brothers in the early 20th century, and they rejected it and encouraged her to patent it. And so she patented it and started spreading it word of mouth, and it kind of made its way through classrooms. It definitely had a lot of economic principles that you could learn from the game. And over time, it kind of went through many different hands and eventually made its way to a gentleman by the name of Charles Darrow, who lived in Philadelphia. And if you look at the patents for the Landlord's Game and the patented version of Monopoly, you can clearly see some similarities in kind of how the game had evolved over that 30-year period.
I think one of the most intriguing characters in the film is a guy named Dominic Mergo. Let's listen to him as he prepares for a tournament in which his brother is also going to be competing.
I want to be world champion, and if it means squashing my little brother like a bug, I'm going to do it. But let me also say this. If, and only if, I am eliminated earlier, I want this guy to go all the way. And win, lose, or draw, he's always going to be my brother. I love you, Gabe.
Was Dominic Mergo any good, or did he just talk a good game?
Well, Dom is actually the 1995 Rhode Island state champion. They had a kind of a tournament for the youth back then. And his brother was also a Rhode Island state champion as well. And so the two of them both qualified for the 2009 U.S. championship. And unfortunately, in that tournament, his antics didn't really fold over into him actually doing well in the tournament. But he held his own against some bigger opponents, and certainly he hopes to be back again. He has told me that if he can find a woman that will beat him at the game of Monopoly, he will marry her on the spot.
Yeah, well, this is assuming that she would be at all interested.
Exactly.
The most recent U.S. championship was in Las Vegas. Where and when is the next one going to be?
Well, they kind of recycle where they hold the tournaments every time. They tend to hold them every 4 years, kind of like the World Cup.
Mm-hmm.
The last U.S. championship was in Washington, D.C., and the World Championship was in Las Vegas, but they've held them all over the world. Before Las Vegas, the World Championship was in Japan. It's been in London, Monaco. They tend to pick kind of glitzy and glamorous cities that kind of evoke the feel of the game as the venue for it. So probably the next time that they'll be holding a set of U.S. and national tournaments will probably be in around 2013.
I'm speaking with Kevin Tostado, the producer and director of Under the Boardwalk, the Monopoly documentary, and you're listening to Only a Game. Monopoly has been a bonanza for Parker Brothers, of course, and it has outlasted thousands of other games. Having filmed all these players, do you have a sense of really what particularly accounts for Monopoly's extraordinary run?
There's a number of factors that kind of contribute to that, and I'm sure there's kind of some unseen ones that kind of just came along at the right place at the right time. I mean, it really was first kind of published during the Depression, and much like the kind of the recent years that we've been going through with the recession, in that people like to kind of live vicariously through the game, and so you have this opportunity to become a landowner and to gather lots of money and properties, and that's something that many people have not yet had an experience to do so in their lives, especially kids. It's, for some, it's the first chance they've had an opportunity to handle paper money, even though it may not be U.S. currency. It kind of has that feel to them, but it's also a learning experience, and for many families, it's a bonding tool. I mean, I grew up with Monopoly in the house and got to the point where I took it so seriously that my family kind of stopped wanting to play with me because I always wanted to win and they just wanted to have a good time.
Now, you mentioned, of course, the play money in Monopoly, but we should mention that these tournaments have real money involved. You if you win, you get the amount of money that is in a Monopoly set, right?
And that's correct, $20,580. You get a Monopoly bank if you win.
Kevin, you mentioned that you played Monopoly as a youngster. Do you still play?
One of the reasons why I kind of created this documentary in the first place is Monopoly has always been my favorite board game, and I knew as a kind of a teenager that they had these different U.S. and world championships and that I wanted to try and qualify. But because they only hold them every 4 years, I always tended to think about it at the wrong times in the cycle. Back up to summer 2007, that's when I kind of realized that the next set was going to be coming up in the next couple of years. But also was deciding what to do for kind of my next feature film. And so I decided to kind of combine the two and to create this documentary about the game of Monopoly. And now that I've finished production on it, I have started to play in a couple local tournaments and held my own against some big players. I've beaten a past world champion at a table. I haven't made it to any final tables yet, but I still got a lot of time to practice before the next world championship.
Kevin Tostado is the producer and director of Under the Boardwalk, a new film about one of the world's most popular board games. The film acclaimed Best Documentary at the Anaheim International Film Festival will next be screened at the Sedona International Film Festival in Arizona at the end of February. Kevin, thank you very much for speaking with me.
Thank you for having me on.
It's 22 and a half minutes before the hour.
Support for Only a Game comes from the listeners of WBUR Boston, where the program is produced. Oliver Wyman, an international strategy consulting firm. With 3,000 professionals worldwide, Oliver Wyman serves global 1,000 companies. OliverWyman.com. And Harvard University, whose Harvard Extension School offers online and on-campus courses to students around the world. extension.harvard.edu. This is NPR.
Giveaways of bobblehead dolls vaguely resembling players, free tickets for guys willing to have their heads shaved. Sports franchises have come up with all sorts of dandy promotions to increase attendance, but last weekend the Boston Blazers of the National Lacrosse League crossed the line, at least according to some of their fans. During halftime, the Blazers staged a contest to see which of three female contestants could give their mascot, Scorch, the best lap dance. Some fans were dismayed. "It was an absolute disgrace," said a message posted on the team's Facebook page. Another fan wrote, "You try explaining to my kids what they were doing to the mascot." Nobody associated with the Blazers took up that challenge, and neither will I.